Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Mega Ram with a special version and presentation of Random Encounters. This will be called the arcade section of the podcast. I get to talk to a very good friend, collaborator for many years, about a project that brought us together and also changed a lot for each of us individually and as a group and collective. Forever Famicom is now in its 10th year of existence, which sounds crazy to say, but here we are, 10 years since this landmark album, at least to us, you know, and to you if you've heard it, hopefully. Kay Murdoch is my guest. Kay Murdoch, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on and or even just doing this, man. I think it's much needed, you know, for us to revisit this.
Yeah, man, this is kind of long overdue. I knew this day would come. We've been talking about the 10-year anniversary and what it would would entail. And and the world is very different at this time. But yeah, like it's fun to reminisce on something that we created and that has touched so many people and makes me feel very proud to have done it. So have you gone back? Have you listened to the album recently?
A couple weeks ago, I listened to it. I was driving, one of the rare times I was driving. and I said, yo, let me just listen to it front to back. So I made sure I took like a, no pun intended, a scenic route to get to where I was driving. I was driving down to my job because I had been there 3 months. And I was like, I'll take the park road, the scenic route to get there. And I think the album is like 45 minutes. And I listened to it front to back. And I was like, man, this is like probably and arguably for some the best production I've ever done as far as just like a complete album. I'm from that old school era of just one MC, one producer. So I wanted to have one sonic sound and or one consistent sonic sound. So, yeah, I did listen to it. And actually, there was a couple parts like not I cringed at, but I just, you know, I remember making some of those beats in like 2008. So obviously being 2020, I was like, man, I would have replaced that snare or this mix is dry. I need to make it more dynamic. And but overall, like, yeah, for what it is, I'm happy with it.
Me too, man. I listen back and I'm like, wow, like I was so young, either with my thought process, the way I was approaching rhymes was different. The stories I told, I'm like, wow, like, where did I get the inspiration for that? Or how did, you know, that happen? And it's really cool to be able to look back. I think that's the best thing about being a musician or just creating art in general, is that you can look back and be like, oh, that's where I was at that time. And it becomes that time capsule. So it's really dope to be able to see that. So this album, we did... There's like one official, maybe two official music videos that we actually like did real like footage for.
Right.
And that would be Epoch and Forever, which I did in Phoenix with some friends.
Right.
The rest were either just, you know, not, there were no videos done for them, or there was a Forever Famicom movie that was supposed to happen way back where a friend of ours created, he did about the first three or four?
He did four, yeah, up to Contact, I think. Or so he picked songs.
Yeah, he kind of jumped around and he picked four that he thought, you know, would, you know, tell the story the best. And they're still on YouTube. You can grab them if you'd like. They turned out a lot of fun. So there are some that did not get videos. So like, if you could go back in time, like what song do you think would make a good video? If we can go back on it.
Man, the girl with the makeup would be cool just because it kind of has that vibe of an old school hip hop song. Like, you know, like everyone, our favorite groups usually would do that, those kind of songs, like a storytelling joint that always had like a little message, but was like a dope track. And that was one of my favorite tracks. I know that's like a later question that we'll get into, but something about that song, this always kind of, you know, kind of got me in the feels a little bit, because I mean, and not because it was told in a way that it was like trying to tug on the heartstrings or whatever, but I think anyone can just relate to that, going through like being a teenager, like a prepubescent kind of person. And then just visually, because it's the story, I feel like between the sounds and then what you're saying, you could have easily had that played out in like a visual, you know, like a Baby Ran, kind of like the Skies Is the Limit video for Big.
I always thought about that. That's such a great concept to have like a younger me like rapping these words.
Right, right.
You know, because it's like, that's definitely a concept ever since I've seen that video that I thought like, man, that would be really dope to do. Speaking of Biggie, there is definitely some connection to some of my favorite artists, at least at the time and now still. I love that you fit in the Super Nintendo from Super Nintendo Sega Genesis on
Juicy.
For the gamers from Juicy. It's literally like the quintessential rap line about video games, you know?
Yep.
So it would kind of almost be a crime if we didn't. So I'm really glad that you found a way to fit that in.
Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis.
And I wasn't even thinking about it at the time. I think that's what makes it so cool that there were two heads working on this, is that I'd write something, send it to you, get it back, hear a whole new sample, a whole new sound, a whole new like audio clip. And I'm like, oh, wow, that was brilliant. You know, so let's get into these questions. So I remember you saying that Forever Famicom was loosely an idea that you had kind of before we met. And you were going to do some sort of video game project. So if we had not met, what would it have sounded like? Would you have gone like instrumental or compilation? You know, what do you think? Where was your head at that time? Where like what would it have probably come out to be?
Probably some kind of beat tape or something. I think at that time when I was making these beats, I was sampling obviously a lot of video games and not even really thinking like this could be something that I could have someone rap over. Because actually, well, even with Panacea, the other group people know me from with Raw Poetic, there was a couple Panacea tracks. We actually had a song on our fourth album, which is probably the album that a lot of people don't know about, because we had left Raucous and signed with the independent label called Tasteful Licks. We did an album called A Mind on a Ship Through Time, and on that album there was a song called Chrono Trigger, and the whole idea was like basically Jason, Raw Poetic, was kind of rapping as if he was like jumping in time, not literally, but just like jumping over moments and memories. And if you had the ability to kind of control time, you know, some of the things you would do, but just done in his very Raw Poetic abstract way. I want that good stuff, mean it, won't you? Take me, wake me, hey, why don't you? Bring me through your past, I hunt you. Hit that spot, no one can punch you. Send the good stuff, mean it, won't you? Take me, wake me, hey, why don't you? Bring me through your past, I hunt you. Hit that spot, no one can punch you. And on the last album we did, 12-Step Program, there's a sample from Kung Fu when you're going up the stairs on the last song, Incubator Purgatory. So I had always been sampling video games, but I don't know. I just never thought of it as being anything that would be like, I never thought of it in context of having someone rap over it. So I was like, I'll just do a beat tape. And, you know, maybe put it out. I was talking to a label in Japan at that time, which actually later you and I would, and Mr. Miranda would wind up being on with the River City Music. Mm-hmm. And they were asking me, like, what kind of music do you want to send or put out a beat tape, and having me submit all this stuff. So I hadn't sent them any of the Forever Famicom stuff, but dare I say, if I had met you, I would have. So that's probably what it would have turned into. I don't know if the name would have been Forever Famicom. I think as you and I started coming together with it, and I was like, oh, this would be a cool kind of subtitle for the project. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's one of those coulda, woulda, shoulda things, right?
Yeah, like, who knows? I always like to think about the alternate endings as kind of a thing that I thought on this thought a lot. It's like, what would have happened if, you know, a couple of decisions would have went a different
like
way?
Like, if you never reached out to me, what would have happened, right?
Dude, I don't know. Like, you know, wow, it's crazy to even think. So from there, the album comes out June 2010.
Yeah, June 1st, 2010.
Wow. Okay, so we start getting offers and to go and tour this record.
Right.
And some of them were in like really unique places, like different conventions. Do you remember your first convention that like maybe me and you came to, and like how did that go?
Oh man, yeah, it was it YuleCon?
Wow.
That was with, who was with us? Matt Storyville was with us. Who the audience, I mean, they should know Storyville. He's definitely, you know, put his touch on vocally and engineering wise on a lot of your records, but yeah, they'll know him as Brad Bradford.
Brad Bradford here.
From Mega Ran. Actually, that was the track I produced off Mega Ran 9, The Bailout. And this was Brad Bradford here. And
breaking news, Brad Bradford here reporting live from Robot City Jail, where a large crowd has formed in response to Dr. Thomas Light's recent incarceration. Oh, wait a moment. Here comes Mega Ran.
Excuse me.
And I didn't know until he did it while we were on the road. I was like, oh yeah, you're Brad Bradford. So anyway, but he was with this. Shout out to Count. He was with us, and it was that first time we went to Texas, and we kind of met in Texas for South By. That was like the run. We started in Texas, and I believe, was YuleCon in Florida?
No, YuleCon was Dallas, 2010, I guess? So that was the holiday then, that would be, because it was Yule. We also met Brennel Floss at that concert.
Brennel Floss was there, yes,
first
yes.
Time I met him, his show was amazing, and we've maintained a friendship since then. Also, strange thing that I remember is that Brennel Floss told me about Spotify that day. That's the very first time I heard the word Spotify.
Yo!
It was in 2010. We were sitting there, and he was, because it was big in Australia, I think, first.
Okay.
And so we were doing a live stream, and Brent had fans from all over the world. And I remember them coming in there saying, when are you going to put your music on Spotify? And I was like, what the heck is Spotify? And so he starts explaining, oh, it's the streaming thing that, you know, and at that time, you know, iTunes, and that was really it. Like, it was buying and downloading music was the only way. And he was like, yeah, it's this thing called like streaming. Like, so like you stream your music and like people don't have to like download it onto their computer, but they just pay a, you know, a fee. And I was like, oh, that's so weird. So I don't know why I clearly remember that conversation happening at YuleCon.
Wow.
Also, I mean, just what did you think of the vibes though? Like, were you, you know, kind of thrown off?
Man.
Like, the reason why we made a song like Contact was to try to, you know, ease our fans, right, hopefully, or friends into the Con experience without feeling like complete, you know, weebs, so to speak. So yeah, what were your thoughts going into like seeing cosplay and seeing, you know, that different type of energy as far as like audiences, like audience participation and you know, the different levels of, let's say, excitement that you see at a con versus like a concert?
I definitely, you know, you probably, I know you got to know it with me whenever I would say this, I defer to Rand. That was always like a lot of like my go-to segue. But no, I really did defer to you, particularly on the song Contact, because, you know, I had heard about cosplay and all that stuff, and it was kind of surreal. I think was one of the Ayers brothers, was it Chris Ayers or Greg Ayers was there? That was like my first time meeting any kind of
maybe
voice
both
actor
of them. I'm not sure, okay, but yeah, it might have been. I believe Greg was there.
Okay, yeah. Well, it was because you were like, "Yo, that's the dude that does Vegeta's voice." So that, you know, I was like, "What?" And you know, then seeing you go down the line later and work with Kyle Hebert and all those people, like it was amazing. I think to see these people who most people would just pass by and not even pay attention to, they were rock stars down there, even at YuleCon. So, and you know, I think that's the first time too I even paid attention to how each con is kind of branded based on a fandom or a theme. And you know what I really remember? There was I don't remember the name of the group that performed, but they had these big Tesla coils. it was crazy. I mean, just stuff that I'm like, I would never see this on a traditional hip hop show.
Right.
And yeah, like, you know, everyone seemed to be cool. It was fun, man. I think about those times. I was broke as a joke, but it was so fun just being able to travel around, you know, and just perform music.
Yeah, that's the I guess another big thing about it is that, yeah, we were broke. We were not making a lot of money. No. I was taking days off work to come out and travel. So I'm losing money on both ends. Right. But we were able to have like just unbelievable memories being able to play shows all over the place. And that group was called Arc Attack, by the way.
Arc Attack
used the Tesla coils there. I just found some photos from that. It's unbelievable. This stuff looks wild. Bro, the internet, man, it's something else. Yeah, it looks like freaking lightning striking. Yo, this is crazy. But anyway, I met a bunch of the year before that, me and Mr. Miranda had toured to Dallas and met some friends out there, and I remember some of them coming. They were like our hip hop head friends, and they came there and was like, what is this?
Right.
Like, yo, they out there about to start a fire or something. Like, what's happening? And I was like, oh man, just keep watching. It's so fun. Like make sure you catch Bruno Floss. He's amazing. You know, I remember just trying to convince them because they were like, oh, I didn't know what this was, you know. Right. So it's been fun trying to, you know, bring our people in. And I don't know about you, but I've had conversations with friends and fans who've been like, yo man, I'm only here to see y'all, you know what I'm saying? Like and I'm like, yo, the price is like $50 to get into these things, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, you just came for one concert? You know, so like it's been an honor, man, to be able to try to bring, you know, our fans into new places and new experiences. So what is the best experience that this album has brought you, you think?
Man, just being able to see the world, man. Like, you can't, man, I talk about this with a lot of close friends and even my students who I teach. I'm like, yo man, there's so much of the world you're probably never gonna see. Like, you know, even if you had all the money in the world and resources, it's just a lot of like places that you're never gonna experience. So while you can and while you are here, do it. And if you can travel the world and see these things on like based on something you love to do, carrying you to that place or helping being the vehicle to get you there, that's like a blessing, man. I mean, you know, so I thought a lot of this stuff I was going to witness and experience when I was signed, you know, with Panacea, and we had to deal with Ruckus and Sony. And even the guys who ran the label were in my ear like, yo, we're going to take you to Europe and you're going to work with Q-Tip and all these people. And I was like, of course, I'm like sitting there like the cartoon wolf with the tongue out and the eyes bugged out, like, you know, like this is just seems so tantalizing. But of course, it didn't happen that way. And it's just funny how this project, which I didn't expect, I mean, I knew it was going to be good because whatever I kind of commit to, I always try to put my all in. But I didn't know the legs this thing was going to have. I didn't know that this was going to be the reason I get to go to Japan. And this is the reason I get to go to Europe. And this is the reason I get to see, honestly, beyond, I think the farthest I've been in the U.S. at that point was maybe Chicago. So I hadn't even gone over to I've been to the West Coast, but it was like to visit a friend once. But all that is in between. And I mean, this is amazing, man. And even still, I know we're somewhat landlocked right now because of coronavirus, but I will tell you for sure, I will never take for granted being able to travel, particularly to perform music. And obviously, you know, it's not like we were going to places and coming out with a bag full of cash. We usually had a bag full of the same merch that we brought into the to the venues. But I won't never take that for granted. And so whenever we do get to go out again, if this is I'm going to treat it like it's my last time on stage, my last time out in the, you know, out in these streets, so to speak, because I don't know, man. But that was the coolest thing about what this album brought to me, just the opportunity to meet people and to see places. And for that, I'm no pun intended, forever grateful.
Word. Okay. So let's talk about some of the memories. We went to the UK. First time that any of us had gone to the UK, any particular memories stand out from that trip? We went to play the London Anime Con.
London Anime Con.
And then we, I think we flew into Manchester first to do a gig. It was a really fortunate situation because the timing worked out. I think we got asked to play London Anime Con. And then...
was it Megabyte, which turned into Superbyte, right?
Superbyte, yeah. So that became a thing in Manchester. So it turned out that Manchester is also like this big chiptune music haven.
Right.
Who had also wanted us to play. So so we made Manchester kind of our home base. We had a friend out there. Shout out to Jamie, Marcus, and the Groovement crew. And so that became our kind of home base. We flew in and out of Manchester and then just rode trains around. So any particular memories out there for, that you could recall?
Well, you said ride trains. You knew which one came to mind.
Oh, man.
No, I'll let you share that later. But, man, okay. I've been only three or four times. You've been way more than that. Probably double that, right?
Maybe. I'm not sure. I don't even remember now.
So the first time we went, which was like summer of 2011, I just remember going with shout out to DN3 and Cisco Lost Perception, because we were all kind of, it was funny, it was basically like you and like your top producers, because it was, and I remember we even did, it was a bad name, but we did this thing called the Beatdown. Mm-hmm. Or something. The Beat Off. Which for four dudes traveling by themselves was not the name you wanna call it. But I remember sitting in Manchester, or London maybe, before we were leaving, and it was, you were sending us these samples, and it's funny because those samples wound up turning into tracks that wound up being on Megan Ran 10.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to Trafalgar Square. I remember Piccadilly Circus, and I still have all these pictures, like the pictures of us kind of doing, we look like some bad boy band, like standing in front of Piccadilly Circus, like maybe getting ready to leave the underground, and we were like posing all cool. And yeah, I remember just those kind of moments, and meeting Adrian who ran Megabyte, and then we met the guys from The Word Is Bond. So it was cool because it was like crossing off a bunch of stuff that you got to obviously see Europe and London and all this stuff, but also meeting people that you'd only really talk to through the internet. So it was super cool, man. And again, just very appreciative of those opportunities. Then I mean, so that was the good. The ugly or bad was definitely when I got pink eye conjunctivitis in one of our turns there. I think that was 2013 or 14 when we went, and we wound up having to sleep in less than stellar accommodations after a show we did in Brixton.
Yeah.
Yielded me having to have to walk with a dead phone in a place I'm the worst with directions. I can barely even follow directions when my iPhone works. But somehow I managed to get what I needed from like the free healthcare clinic and come back and still make our train. And for that, I'm super, and I think my wife is super thankful for me getting back.
Dude, it's really by like, I can't think of any other way, but like divine intervention that we were able to navigate the UK, because I was so afraid of like creating like giant roaming costs on my phone. So I never got a plan. I never even turned my phone on the first few times I would go. I would just keep it on like airplane mode and just use Wi-Fi whenever we could find it, because I was afraid of it like messing up my service. So I never could make a phone call. I never could do anything. I still don't know how to make a phone call in the UK. I don't know. What is it? 4-4? I don't know. But anyway, I didn't have Facebook. Like, there was really no way to contact people. And for some reason, somehow we were able to still navigate an entire tour with no car. Like, we were on trains. We bought the train tickets a month in advance. So it was like, you have to be on at this time or else you pay double the price.
Expensive, man. Yep.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. So I don't know how we did it, man, in a complete other country. Like, it's insane to think, like, that we did it more than once, too.
Yeah.
It's nuts, man. what I liked about it is, again, like, I think just the album in general, it brought together so many like cultures and things that I loved, because us coming together is like, it's hip hop lovers, video game lovers, both coming together to enjoy this project, and us coming together to create it. So therefore, when we went on tours, I think that our tour, like my, at least for me, the tour started becoming more and more diverse, as far as like, one day you're playing a underground, you know, crappy, you know, hole in the wall dive bar. Next day you're in a 5-star hotel playing, right, you know, in a freaking giant, you know, conference room. So like, even when we went overseas, like to the UK, it was literally like that. Like, we got to Manchester, we played like a rap show in like a basement. Right. And then we played a convention, you know? So it was like really cool to just see those different things and to be able to bring those different people together. Play the same sets in both of these places. Still, yep, freestyle in both of these places. So it's really dope to see. And when we first got, you know, to go, I wanted to bring everybody that was, you know, instrumental to my career, you know, no pun intended, because you know, you, Cisco, we had just made Black Materia, or maybe we were starting it. I don't remember if it was out at that time.
No, it was out.
It was out. Yeah. You're right. Because I remember one of our shows, like somebody from Square Enix came to the show.
Yes. Yep.
And I was like scared to death. I was like, oh God. And they were like, no, we love this, man. We've been playing it in the office. I was like, oh snap. So like, being able to bring everybody, DN3, everybody who had been there from the beginning, was really important to me. And I mean, we didn't really figure out how to make it work as far as like a live show, but I think, you know, because everybody had more of a stripped down, you know, performance setup. But I would like to even try that again sometime. You know what I mean? Like, just bring everybody out and be like, all right, so there's DN3 on the you know, ones and twos. There's Murdoch playing beats live and triggering samples, and then, you know, Lost Perception doing things. Like, I would love to have that happen one day, like, again, because
That would be awesome. That would be really awesome. And I think everyone kind of fit, because, you know, I would defer to Mel, because he's a DJ. So I'm like, I remember specifically that one show we did, it was like a hole in the wall kind of like basement joint. And I was like, y'all need to take it back to like treat it like a club in Philly or something. So Mel, I think, had like, you all had your routine, and I was more than happy to back off and let him take the lead on that, because I'm like, yo, like, this is just, you need that raw kind of DJ and MC kind of vibe. And like, I'm not a DJ. I'm not even in the front. I'm more of a glorified hype man. I can play some triggers, like give you some comedy, but you know, so I guess I don't even know what I am. I'm just K Murdoch, you know. I'm an entertainer, but it works, and I appreciate when people are like, oh, we missed you on this show. I'm like, really? Okay, it's cool. Man. So I think, and Cisco was good with photography. So
yeah, he was out there taking pictures. It was awesome, pictures, man.
Yeah,
I remember like so many memories, and even like Cisco coming to me like even sometime kind of recently, like maybe like a year ago, being like, yo. I never forgot that, man. That was awesome. Like, that's the first time I got to leave the country.
Right.
Like, to be able to fly out, you know, because people enjoyed like the music we make. It's pretty nuts, man. So, yeah, when you stop and think about it, it is amazing, like, that we've been able to do this and that we're still doing it. So,
yep,
that's pretty nuts. All right. So I was going to ask about favorite song from the album. I feel like that's a tough one, but I don't know if I've ever asked you that, to be honest. So, like, what's the song, like, the song that probably has got the most play from you on the album?
I really like the way Double Dragon came out, just because there was another, you know, us taking something like Double Dragon and putting, like, that, I don't know, what some people think, I always go to left field with these changes or whatever. And I think I even told you recently, the reason I did it was because I've never been like good at finding like a loop that can sustain like the DJ Premier Night Wonder style that can sustain like a 4-minute record. So just so I would not get bored, I would put these crazy loop changes in and like play synths over stuff and, you know, to kind of garnish it out. But yeah, that song I always remember too, not only because Germicide jumped in, but originally the plan was actually I had approached Raw Poetic about being Jimmy Lee, and he listened. He was like, I like the beat, but I can't rap about that stuff, man. It like almost like he couldn't take off his cool, which he definitely could have, because he's a gamer. Jason's a gamer, and rap about that. So I was a little disappointed that he didn't jump on, but obviously Germicide came in and killed it. Like you all, I don't know. I love that track, and I love the cuts that, because I told Rags, I was like, yo, approach it like Wu-Tang sound design or something, you know what I mean, like with the kung fu stuff. So he was all into that, because he's a former DMC winning DJ, so he was like, yo, this is like taking me back, yo. I remember he was like so excited, sending me clips of him in the studio like scratching. I was like, yo, just get the song done, but thank you. But no, yeah, I'm glad he liked it, because I've definitely given stuff to people and they're like, oh, like, all right, man, you bug me enough, let me get on these cuts. And you can tell, like, the passion versus the people who are just doing it to placate you, you know.
That's true. Yeah, you know, I think it turned out the way it was supposed to. I mean, it would be dope to think, like, man, if Raw P would have got on there,
right?
Like, that'd have been dope. I mean, we wound up collaborating, I think it was, what, a year later, maybe?
On the Gauntlet.
For the Gauntlet. I think it was, like, a year or two later.
Right.
But, yes, so all in due times. And I've had that, too, where people would be like, man, I don't know if I can get down with, like, a video game thing. And I was like, yo, just approach it like you would, you know, anything else. Like,
right.
You know, something more serious even.
Right.
All right. That is the end of part one of our two-part conversation. Myself and K Murdoch get into more songs on the Forever Famicom album and where that album and its subsequent success has taken us ever since then. It's been a long journey. I just want to thank all of you who have been around for these 10 years since we put this album out. And I just feel really special. So thank you. And be on the lookout. We have a re-release coming very soon, as well as some new merch. So just check us out on Bandcamp for that, which would be megarankmurdoch.bandcamp.com. And you'll see the cool stuff we got in store for you. And you're going to love it. All right. Once again, y'all, this is not game over. This is only the end of the first chapter. You got to eject your disc, put in disc 2, which comes next week. See you then. Peace.